From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the Kerr County flood hearing.
When we got here, Governor Youngkin was here. I was here. The mayor was here. Everyone was here.
Then I wasn't. Then I wasn't.
And you were not.
And Texas redistricting.
This is foundational to who we are as Americans and a democracy. So I'm prepared to do what it takes.
Support for this podcast of Texas Matters comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. By investing in local communities and rewarding policyholders for prioritizing safety, they are building a more resilient Texas. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. After the July 4th flash flood that turned the Upper Guadalupe River into a disaster area, Texas lawmakers came to Kerrville on Thursday to get answers about what went wrong. The death toll from that Texas flood has reached at least 138, with 27 of those deaths occurring at Camp Mystic, a Christian summer camp for girls. Lawmakers heard stories from the survivors of the flood and their demands for help in the region's recovery.
Good afternoon. My name is Nancy Zadunkwitz, and I'm speaking to you on behalf of Hunt, Texas today. I was at our river house in Hunt on July 4th. We're just down the road from Camp Mystic. My family has had property on South Fork for nearly a century. My mother went to Camp Mystic, so did I. We've weathered many storms, but July 4th was completely different. Our home is 35 to 40 feet above the normal river water level, and by the time my father happened to wake up at 3 a.m., the water was already at the house, and we had no warning. Within minutes, the water was already covering the yard, which is how I injured my ankle, and we raced to our cars. We drove out onto Highway 39. There was nowhere to go. All the routes to higher ground on the other side of 39 are fenced, and the water was rising too quickly for us to try to make it to higher ground on foot. So we climbed on top of our cars, and then we climbed into cedar trees, and I had to help my 66-year-old mom. Our cars flitted away soon after that. We ended up staying in the trees for several hours. We watched other cars shoot down the river and massive trees, and we just prayed and planned for what we would do if our tree was the next one to fall down. Several of our dear friends and neighbors lost their lives that night, people we've known for a lifetime, so we're actually very, very lucky. But our house was swallowed by the river. The community that we love has been devastated. Our house is now, you know, stripped down to the studs. And so today I'm asking for your help because this community really needs help with recovery and we need preparation for the next flood. Had there been early detection of the rising waters and sirens, we may have been able to leave in time to get to higher ground safely. I heard someone else say that they didn't think that that was necessary or would save lives in Hunt, and they are dead wrong. And frankly, that's offensive. There need to be more evacuation routes. There was no place to drive to on 39 that would have taken us down before it didn't take us up. So we need places to be able to drive that aren't private and fenced if we had that warning. More lives also could have been saved if people were able to warn their neighbors, but we have no self-service in Hunt. And when it comes to recovery, I specifically want to ensure that efforts focus on Hunt, which was the epicenter of the devastation, followed by Ingram. The permanent residents of Hunt obviously come first. They need housing assistance and mental health resources and help to rebuild their homes and businesses and lives. We're part of this economy and we are part of this community. And so these homes suffered the most damage, and families like mine don't know how we'll ever be able to afford to rebuild. And so because we're not eligible for FEMA funds, because many don't have insurance, it's a real question whether or not Hunt comes back if these homes also don't come back.
At the hearing, there was questioning of the leaders of Kerr County about their lack of response and preparedness for the flood. Why wasn't an alarm sounded sooner? And why didn't they take flooding seriously when they live in an area known as Flash Flood Alley? Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was pointed in his takedown of Kerr County Judge Rob Kelly.
Judge Kelly, I never saw you on day one. I came here from Austin. In this room, I talked to the sheriff multiple times, Sheriff. I talked to the mayor multiple times. We had a meeting when we got here. Governor Youngkin was here. I was here. The mayor was here. Everyone was here.
Then I wasn't. Then I wasn't.
And you were not. You were not. And I asked the question, where is the county judge? I have covered multiple emergencies in my 10 years as lieutenant governor. This is about as bad of a day as you can have, and I've had a lot of bad days. Because we didn't just lose people. We didn't know where people were. And you weren't here. I asked where you were for the press conference that night. You weren't here. I don't know where you were on day one on July 4th, but you should have been here. You should have been here directing that response. That's your responsibility. And Charles Schwertner asked you the question. I want to set the record straight. I'm not pointing a finger. I'm not blaming you. I just want to set the record straight. Everyone was here that day working their ass off, and you were nowhere to be found.
In the hearing, the public learned that the three leading public officials in Kerr County, including Kelly, were unavailable during the early hours of the flash flood. They didn't prepare for the possibility of the flash flood, and they didn't trigger a code red warning alert when it was first requested, losing valuable time that could have saved lives.
Chair calls Representative Johnson.
The three guys in Kerr County who were responsible for sounding the alarm were effectively unavailable.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there a protocol that needs to be put in place that if the three folks who are responsible at this moment are not available for whatever reason, what should we do?
Yes, ma'am. We can look at that real hard. You know what I mean? Best thing I can tell you, I got the call at 420. Prior to the 420, that 50 minutes earlier than that, our people were out there. Our dispatch was calling additional people out. Yes, I can look and maybe they could call me earlier.
But no code red was issued, correct?
No, there was a code red issued, I believe, to look about 501. But there was additional weather alerts being put out that whole time.
But who issues the code red?
Our dispatch issues it.
Under whose authority?
Anyone who tells them. They have supervisor approval.
And who is the supervisor?
The supervisor on that night was Sergeant Merritt.
So are you saying that there was a code red that was issued at 422?
No, that's when it was requested.
When was it issued?
501.
I spoke with Scott Praddock about the hearing and how it fits in with Texas politics and this special legislative session that is now underway.
Yeah, it's easy to point the finger at people who don't have nearly the resources and nearly the ability of the state to respond to something like this. I mean, look, people are going to be angry when they hear, and this is accurate, when they hear that the county judge was sleeping, when this disaster was playing out. But keep in mind, it was at 4 a.m. And I would say that the state leadership has consciously been pushing these local governments to the point where they have fewer and fewer resources to prepare for and respond to disasters like this. And what I mean is, and there's a proposal for that, during this special session that's unfolding right now, what I'm talking about is those tax caps that they put in place, making it harder for local governments to raise revenue and then spend it as they see fit. There's been a real war on local control, and you've seen that now play out with serious consequences. And this flooding is just another disaster of that. Example of that.
Sure. But okay, the county judge, he wasn't just sleeping. He was sleeping at his lake house in Lake Travis.
Sure. The way that Governor Abbott was vacationing in California when this flooding started to unfold. And then at some point he came back and remembered that Lieutenant Governor Patrick was the acting governor as all this started. I think one of the things that was really made really clear by state leaders and local officials as well, including the Travis County Judge, Andy Brown, they talked about the timeline of how quickly this all played out. And as you know, the weather forecast that they were getting from the National Weather Service, there's been the debate about President Trump, his administration's cuts to those sorts of resources. None of the forecasts that they were receiving for those operations managers, the people who are always keeping their eyes open for some potential unfolding disaster, none of those forecasts said anything like what ended up happening in the Hill Country, and they didn't have a real indication that there was going to be such a tragedy or the potential for it until overnight, that July 4th weekend. And so all these folks really caught with their pants down.
Well, the National Weather Service did put out warnings and alerts the day before that there was the potential for extreme flooding. And some of the other counties reacted to that and prepared for it. Kendall County and Kerr County, very different response, very different levels of preparedness. Also, this, I understand your point that you're making about how, you know, they cap how much money local governments can raise on property taxes and all these other things, so they don't have the resources. But there have been times when Kerr County did have resources, millions of dollars, in order that they could have spent on this flood warning system, and they chose not to. So that falls flat.
Well, no, I don't know if there's the failures at all levels here. Where were the feds? Where was the state? Where are the locals? We have to depend on all these folks when there's a disaster. And even in places, this, David, even in places like Houston and Harris County, which have so much more when it comes to resources, when there's a hurricane in those places, they have to lean on the state and the feds because they can't do that on their own.
I want to make this point, because this was said multiple times during the hearing on Thursday, that nothing like this has ever happened before, which is complete and total baloney.
Right, that's made up. Right.
That goes to my point. Kerr County has seen multiple floods just like this in the past. The Upper Guadalupe River has seen multiple floods just like this in the past.
100%.
And to say this has never happened before is complete fabrication.
Absolutely. It's finger pointing for the sake of scapegoating. And no one at any level of government is going to want to take full responsibility for that. A lot of what was talked about during the hearing, and you saw a lot of this, was the fact that you did have a lot of folks who just happened to be in the areas volunteering to help, because that's just the way it played out. And the fact that it played out so quickly, so fast, and played out in the overnight hours, but potentially those folks could have been gotten out of there earlier, but you did hear all the testimony again about how there were a lot of folks who are in government who didn't have didn't get the kind of forecast that they from the weather services that they would have needed to get if they were going to take something that seriously and think it was going to be that bad of a disaster.
It's been brought up, the redistricting fight that is part of this special session. And today on Friday, there's going to be a hearing that's expected to be a marathon hearing, highly volatile, people excited, people trying to keep the new map that was revealed this week. Well, what is your take on this map? How harsh is this map?
This map is an aggressive attempt by Republicans to add as many as 5 new seats for Republicans in Texas. Those would be distributed across the state. As you know, they're in South Texas. They're looking at a seat in Central Texas, Houston area, as well as DFW. And I would say that it would be more reasonable for Republicans to maybe draw 1 or 2 additional Republican seats rather than try to go for 5. It might be that this is President Trump and Republicans trying to establish a negotiating position such that 5 would be, in their estimation, would be great if they could get it, but that they might settle for 1 or 2 new seats. But this has come straight from the White House, David, that the president wants the Texas Republican Party, those who are in power at the Texas Capitol, to basically bail him out in the 2026 election, because you can expect that Democrats will do better in that election. It's the second midterm of a two-term president, and generally the president's party does terribly in that election. You can ask George W. Bush about that. Back in 2006, President Barack Obama saw midterms that were terrible for him as well, for his party, and I'd expect much the same thing. You had Hakeem Jeffries, the leader of the U.S. House Democrats, come to Austin yesterday, actually came 2 days ago, and he was sort of giving them a pep rally and telling them that they need to stand up and speak out about what's happening, and encouraging folks to fight this thing. And at the same time, you've got Governor Gavin Newsom out in California saying, hey, if you cut up Texas for Republicans, we'll cut up California for Democrats, and we'll send more Democrats. And that is something you have never had before, David. Remember all the way back to 2003, in that mid-decade redistricting, Republicans here, at the behest of the U.S. House Majority Leader at the time, Tom DeLay, he was telling folks, you got to win one for George Bush And you had Republicans pulling out all the stops to create maps that were more favorable for the Republican Party here. But at that time, you did not have Democrats in other states saying that they would do anything to counteract that. Now this is almost like an arms race for redistricting around the country. And it does seem that this is part of what's different about this. And I've been doing this for a long time. You have too. I have never seen, Texans get really agitated about redistricting. I mean, the activists always get really agitated about it. But when there were hearings held on this in Houston and Dallas-Fort Worth, the crowds at those events, I'll say it extended beyond just activists who were angry about this. And I really do think that the difference is President Trump's involvement.
Do you think that the Democrats are going to be able to communicate to everyday voters that redistricting matters to them? There are a lot of unpopular policies that are coming out of the White House that are being allowed by the Republican-controlled Congress, things like the tariffs, things like the cuts to Medicaid and the SNAP benefits and all these other things, tax increases for the middle class and tax breaks for the billionaires. How do they communicate that? And do they say this? We can't fix this unless if redistricting goes forward?
There's the potential that this draws a sharp contrast for people. And redistricting, as you point out, is usually something that's amorphous. And the vast majority of people don't really almost even know what it is or it doesn't really resonate with them. But to talk about the issues you're talking about is the way for Democrats to connect. And you also, by the way, you see Republicans doing this. You see Republicans right now trying to make the argument that drawing more seats for the Republican Party is a way to continue President Trump's, quote, America First agenda. Previously, when there were redistricting efforts by Republicans, they wouldn't even really talk about it, right? It's almost impossible to get Republicans to speak on the record about redistricting. But right now, on social media, you have the GOP arguing that if you want to keep President Trump firmly in power in Washington, what Republicans need to do in Texas is redraw a congressional map. Democrats are countering that by saying that there should be a check on President Trump and that some of the policies that he supports are really hurting people in their everyday lives, the tariffs, taking away Medicaid from certain people and all of that. And so it's really becoming, I think, a fight that people are paying attention to in a way that they didn't before.
So are the Democrats stuck on the sidelines? Do they have a hand to play?
They do. The only hand that Democrats really have to play in this, the only thing they can really do is hope to create some leverage for potentially reshaping the proposed map. And the way that they would do that is by pulling the trigger on what we might call the nuclear option, which is a quorum break, and having either Texas House Democrats or Texas Senate Democrats leave the state to delay implementation of the map. The way that that would create leverage is that if Republicans come under threat of having their primaries delayed next year, that's a way for a lot of GOP challengers to beat them in their elections. Republicans don't want to see that happen. So it could be that if Democrats were to leave the state for a month or 6 weeks or so, that would be followed by a court challenge, potentially in federal court in San Antonio. At that point, if that timeline seemed to be shaping up, Republicans might come back with a counteroffer and say, hey, instead of maybe five additional Republican seats from Texas, maybe we'll do two or three instead. And I've had Democratic operatives say that if that was a scenario that did play out, that Governor Newsom out in California and some of the other Democratic governors might stand down about what they're talking about with redistricting their own states.
So and when would we see a walkout of the quorum?
Potentially as soon as this weekend. As you mentioned, there is a redistricting hearing happening here on Friday as we're recording the show. There is the potential that Republican leadership may advance the map out of the House committee as soon as overnight Friday into Saturday. And I would think that if Democrats were going to execute a quorum break, they'd want to do that before next week, before that map could potentially be on the floor of the Texas House, which I would expect as soon as the middle of or late next week.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton's talking tough about jailing lawmakers to prevent a quorum bust. Is that real?
That's a stretch. It's hard to imagine that Democrats would be arrested over this, although there are very real law enforcement powers for the House sergeants, Sergeant at Arms, as well as the Department of Public Safety to find Democrats if they are in Texas and bring them back to the Texas Capitol. That's why if the Democrats decide to break quorum, they would do it somewhere else. They wouldn't do it in Texas. They would go somewhere like California, Illinois, or someplace that they might consider to be a sanctuary for them, away from that sort of law enforcement effort.
Scott Braddock is the editor of the Quorum Report, an online newsletter that covers Texas politics. One of the Texas Democratic lawmakers who could be busting quorum to block the redistricting effort is State Representative Gina Hinojosa. I spoke to her about the redistricting map and what it means for Texas voters.
Overarching is the targeting of Latino communities in Texas. They are being cracked, right? Broken up so that their power is diminished. I'll give you an example. In Houston, which is the city with the largest population of Latinos in it, there will no longer be a Latino seat in that district, a Latino majority seat that can actually elect the representative of their choice. So overarching is very concerning, especially in a state where that's where the growth is predominantly in the Latino population. I will say more specific to the district that I represent, I'm sitting right now in the Texas Capitol, and the Capitol and most of downtown is now in an East Texas Republican district that goes all the way to Polk County. It's got A&M in it. This is not a community in Polk County that shares a lot in common with the constituents that I represent. And it is essentially really limiting the voice of my constituents. But that's happening all over the state. And so that is the main concern.
The Trump administration basically told Governor Greg Abbott, I need five more seats. He said that publicly. The plan is by doing that, the Republican Party will be able to maintain control of Congress. How do you communicate to everyday voters who really aren't that mired in the concerns of the of maps and this and drawn and Polk County and everything? How do you communicate to people that that is not in their best interest?
That's a great question and an issue that we struggle with, right? Because representation is a global overarching value, foundational to our country, but it doesn't strike that emotional, personal chord that most people respond to. So, but it's really an impact on people's everyday lives. If we just look at the way the Trump administration has impacted Americans and Texans' everyday life. You just think of tariffs and the price at the grocery store right now. Think about the cuts to education, delays in funding, cuts to healthcare, on and on and on. These decisions are fundamental to everyday lives of so many Texans. And this is a way, this way of predetermining the 2026 election through manipulation of the maps that Trump and Republicans are trying to do, is a way to predetermine the outcome of that election and prohibit the public, Americans, Texans, from holding them accountable for these decisions. If there's no accountability, there's no representation. So that is the connection. It is long-winded, right? So we got to figure out how to talk about this in a more succinct way. But yes, what is happening at the Texas Capitol will impact the lives, everyday lives, of every American and every Texan.
So you mentioned tariffs. Let's talk about tariffs. Under the Constitution, the Congress has the authority to set tariffs, not the president. But because it's a Republican-held Congress, they're unwilling to, claw back that their own authority on that issue and allow Donald Trump to do these tariffs almost on whims, on again, off again tariffs with Mexico, for example, which would have a direct impact on the quality of life, prosperity, and the amount of poverty that we have in Texas. If there was a Democrat-controlled Congress, then things could be different? And is that something that people should be thinking about?
Absolutely. I know Republicans in Congress who have told me, we don't want this Trump gerrymandering plan. But they won't stand up to the president. Republicans who are elected to Congress and to the legislature, frankly, will not stand up to Trump. That is why we need to elect Democrats to Congress. And that is what is predicted to happen in the 26 midterms. But for these maps that Trump is trying to get passed in Texas, we need Democrats to hold the president accountable for what he is doing.
So the process seems to be sidelining Democrats. How much authority, how much leverage, how much of a voice do people who oppose these gerrymandered maps, how much do they have?
So, David, this is my favorite kind of fight. It is the fight where the people are overwhelmingly with us. And it's a fight that we can win because of it. So we are looking at this as Democrats every day. This is a very situational fight and trying to figure out how do we win for the day. And so I can't share strategy that would be counterproductive, but I do see a path to beat these Trump maps.
And that would require what, people to take going to the streets protesting? Of course, there's the talk of the quorum busting, not secret. We don't know the details of it. And Attorney General Ken Paxton wants to basically imprison lawmakers who he thinks are going to quorum bust. I mean, what does that look like?
So I'm not afraid of what Ken Paxton is doing. He has his own legal problems to worry about, but I am concerned about how these maps impact my constituents. But remember that this issue of gerrymandering was only added to the special session agenda about 2 weeks ago. The maps were just released about 2 days ago, and already the opposition has been overwhelming with 1,000 people showing up in Arlington to testify. I think we will see today a similar kind of response here in Austin at the first hearing where we have the maps to look at. So people should express their opposition in every way they can think of doing. And because the amount of time they have to pass these maps, 30 days is not a lot of time. One of the biggest challenges is getting the word out to make sure that Texans understand what is at stake and what is happening. And we're asking everybody to let your circles of influence know what is happening.
Ken Paxton does have his own legal problems, but and personal problems, but he does have the authority, some power to, he thinks he can jail you. Are you prepared to go to jail in order to try to stop these maps?
I want to stress the magnitude of this issue that is before us now. Everybody knows that the party in power gets to draw the maps to their favor every 10 years, but not every time, David. If they're allowed to do it every time, then we no longer have free and fair elections. And that's what we're looking at here. So I'm prepared to make big sacrifices to ensure that this doesn't happen. This is foundational to who we are as Americans. It is foundational to a functioning government and a democracy. So I'm prepared to do what it takes.
State Representative Gina Hinojosa is a Democrat representing parts of Austin. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org, and you can find Texas Matters wherever you get cool podcasts. Tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.